Should at least sing.
Okay. Yeah, you were supposed to come over here and give her the right answer from this one.
Give us a second. Okay. Questions from yesterday.
Are really good friends.
Can you do it again? I was tired yesterday.
Being ahead of the other class doesn't mean we're ahead.
Which flowchart? You know, the flowchart.
Yeah.
Okay.
The. There's nothing on our
Yeah,
not even dumb, you can't see that.
Stop lost. Now, why would we say that?
National Guard being like, okay.
Can you see it back there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And as a result of the injury, there was what?
Blood loss.
As a result of the blood loss, what happened?
Low blood pressure.
There was a decreased blood volume. As a result of the decreased blood volume, what was there?
Yeah. increase that activity, which increases heart rate. Increase anything else? It could increase stroke volume, and how would it increase stroke volume? By increasing contractility. Okay, so we increase cardiac contractility. What else do we got? What else has the sympathetic done? It increases the motor tone. Anything else? Increased total peripheral resistance. And what did that cause to happen?
What's the second?
Increased cardiac contractility. Increased intracellular calcium in ventricular muscle cells.
What did it say in ECC?
It says increased hemomotor tone. I'm torn here. I have this dilemma. The dilemma that I have is either you can see it bold enough to know it's there, or you can see it thin enough to read. So I opted for the bold.
Okay.
What happened to that?
What's the TF? Yeah, increase the resistance.
On the four of those, are those all controlled by the sympathetic? All four of those are controlled by the sympathetic. So now we can get the blood transfusion.
So what's happened there then is that we've had an increase in blood pressure, but not very much, because that increase in blood pressure leads to increased blood loss, and we're in a vicious cycle. So, we don't have surgery quite yet, because there's something else that we want to put in there. What we might want to say is, that increased sympathetic activity as an ancillary thing is going to cause increased sweating. And so now we can see why he's clamping. Okay? So that's pretty much the state of the initial state. And then what happened? Then we had surgery. Okay. Ancillary means not a primary, but something that's going along with it. So then we said, okay, surgery. Plug.
Decrease cardiac contractility.
Decrease
fetal motor tone. What did that cause to happen?
Decrease in sweating.
Pardon?
Decrease sweating.
Yeah, but that's not relevant to this issue.
It's a side. You're right. It's on the side.
Side gain.
Right. It would be decreased blood pressure.
So why? So that goes, okay, now we say, okay, that's decreased blood pressure. Decreased contractility.
Oh, we're looking for the three. Yeah. We got phenomotor heart rate.
And what?
Total peripheral resistance.
Muscle part
we're saying, we're looking now at a skeletal muscle bed. flow into the skeletal muscle. So you know what we could do, I'll tell you what we could do, Steve. We could stand. We could stand in the skeletal muscle. Stand the skeletal muscle. There. Okay. I got it now. Are you ready? Are you prepared for excitement? Skeletal muscle. Okay. And what we said was that blood flow depended on several things. We said that blood flow depended on mean arterial pressure, and blood flow depended on arterial resistance. And resistance depended on the balance between sympathetic stimulation, sympathetic vasoconstriction, and situation that we had, we said that this vasoconstrictor was very much bigger plus, than this. And so what happened as we decreased sympathetic activity, this became more predominant, and so flow increased. So what happened to this flow in state one? One was the low blood pressure. We had low flow. And two, with restored blood pressure, we had high flow. So now we're looking at the result of this. And so as a result of the new situation, blood flow went up, increased flow. Periphery. And the increased flow to the periphery caused what happened? Well, caused what? A decreased volume centrally, right? Caused a decreased central volume. Which caused what? A decreased mean arterial pressure. Now we're back to where we were over here. Blood pressure now has gone down. Here. Blood pressure has gone down. We have increased action potential baroreceptors, we have increased sympathetic activity, and as a result of that, we end up with an increased heart rate and a little bit of an increase in total peripheral resistance, an increase in beat motor tone, increase in cardiac contractility. That's the diet.
When there's been a significant blood loss, do they, is there any benefit to controlling the rate that you add blood back in to increase blood volume?
Is there an advantage to controlling the rate? The answer to the question is yes. What's your next question?
What was the question?
The question was, clinically, if you consider how fast you restore the blood volume when you give blood, and I said, probably yes. So what was your next question? Right? I have no idea because that's clinical.
So why did you want us to ask?
If you're increasing your resistance, how are you getting more flow to the periphery?
Oh, because in the case that we said, the increased resistance, the increased sympathetic outflow, is not as much of a factor as the local dilator effects of metabolites. So even though the sympathetic system is now trying to increase resistance in those arterioles, the local factors still have a more of an influence, and the net result is that you have vasodilation. Not quite as much vasodilation as a moment ago before the sympathetics increase their influence.
So the vasodilators are decreasing resistance.
That's right. And so what's going to happen then? The vasodilator, the flow is increasing, so if the blood flow increases, we have flow to periphery increases. What else is going to happen down here? The blood flow increases, then the metabolite level, and metabolites, TEFs, are going to go down, and now you feed back in here, and the vasodilation goes away. Amount but sympathetic activity decreased. That amount decreasing allowed the local vasodilators to become more dominant. And so now the primary effect at the periphery, because sympathetic activity is closer to normal and not as extreme, we have the loss. We have now a situation where this influence is greater than this influence, and we have a decreased resistance. And so now we're saying, well, what happens here? What's happening here is the mean arterial pressure is decreased, but the degree to which mean arterial pressure is decreased is not going to cause, well, it's going to cause an increase in total peripheral resistance, which means that if this resistance is going to increase somewhat, this flow is going to decrease. But at the same time, there's still significant flow to the periphery, which is washing off the metabolites and beginning to return to a more normal situation.
I'm still confused on how increased flow to periphery leads to decreased central volume.
Oh, okay. She said, I'm so confused.
Somebody's going to draw a little sad face.
Here's the system. Okay? Forget about what it is, but here's the system. It's a closed system. Okay? Alright. So if I have a certain amount of blood volume in there, and I have a big narrowing here, and we'll say the flow is in that direction, where would I expect there to be more blood or more volume? In compartment 1 or in compartment 2?
One.
Now, if I decrease this resistance, what's going to happen to the volume in 2?
It's
going to increase. Where did that volume come from?
One.
So if this was the periphery, and it opened up, the volume that's going to flow into there is coming from compartment 1, and compartment 1 volume will decrease.
Does that make sense?
Okay. What else? Well, yeah, it is slower in some. The question is, the local control slower? And it's slower from the standpoint that that's a response to metabolites, a response to metabolic byproducts, a response to oxygen. And for those metabolic metabolites to build up, it takes more time than an action potential coming through the sympathetic nervous system, releasing neurotransmitters. So in that standpoint, yes. Color came back because now he has a lot of volume in the system. To the periphery, that's right. That's right. Okay? What we said was, this particular system that is, the baroreceptor reflex, is not sufficient to bring that pressure back to normal. And later on today, we're going to find out that there's another system involved that will bring it back to normal. It takes a long time. It involves something with pleasure.
Dr. Modell, he's the one.
It's kind of like that. A bean. Okay, it's a bean-shaped thing.
When do we consider something endocrine? Because
spring quarter.
Right. We're talking about like local metabolites going into the bloodstream. They're going into the bloodstream, right? And then they're affecting sort of the receptor.
No, not there.
Okay.
The metabolite in that situation is building up in the extracellular fluid. And it's directly affecting the smooth muscle in the arterioles.
Like cell receptors directly on the muscle.
That's right.
Okay.
Shall we move on? What we want to look at next is we want to talk about the membrane. So now we've looked at the pump, we've looked at the pressure reservoir, we've looked at the volume reservoir, and now we want to look at that exchanger. So we have to worry about some words. What does transcapillary mean? What does exchange mean to you at this time of year?
Giving gifts.
Giving gifts.
And also giving in return.
And also getting in return. So, you go to Kohl's. I don't know why you never do this. You go to Kohl's or JCPenney on Friday morning. At 4:15. Not at JCPenney's in Kohl's. So you don't see the Macy's Parade there. You see the Macy's Parade on Thanksgiving, not on Friday. So
Thursday morning.
That's not the Macy's Parade.
It's in New York.
The Macy's Parade is in New York, and they have these big balloons that go with these people hanging off of them. They yell, Curious George are one of those balloons. And then the man with the old hat comes by and the paint lighter and rescues them. And you go up to the service desk. You make an exchange. You take back this puke-free sweater.
It
says in big letters on the front. It says, "Go Huskies."
I just re-gifted. I just re-gifted next year. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the thing that's wrong with that definition of exchange is that's not what we mean by exchange. We mean from one location to another. So when we say that something moves from the bloodstream to the extracellular fluid, that's exchange. It's moving from one place to another. When we talk about gas exchange, see, if I ask you what gas exchange means to you in physiological terms, you would tell me because you just paid attention, you listened. So 10 minutes ago, what would you tell me?
I would say
give and take. She'd say, "I exchange oxygen for CO2.
Only that's not what exchange means. Gas exchange means exchanging oxygen between the atmosphere and the blood. Moving oxygen from the atmosphere to the alveolar compartment, that's called alveolar gas exchange, and moving it from the alveolar compartment, from the gas phase, into the blood. And exchange in terms of CO2 means moving CO2 from the blood ultimately to the atmosphere. Because we will see next quarter those two things are not related. No, it means changing location. Because if I move from the atmosphere to the alveoli, for example, I consider that exchange. There are no membranes involved. Okay. Let's see. Can we talk about osmotic pressure?
Nope.
What does osmotic pressure mean to you?
It's so weird. Movement of water.
What is it all about? It's about water pressure. Now, osmotic pressure is related to something to do with water.
Water gradient.
Water gradient. Okay, tell me about it.
Water becomes the area of higher concentrations and the area of lower concentrations of water.
Solutes.
Or solutes.
Well,
make up your mind.
It's different. It's low to high solutes.
The concentration of solutes, but the water moves, not the solutes, the particles, ions.
It's high concentration or low? You're right the first time. I think the concentration is
so this is what I
record water. I have lots of water here, none here, so water.
This is what I heard. I heard that we have a membrane. See that? Membrane. And you said that we're talking about water movement across the membrane. Put it in the container. Water across the membrane. And you said initially that water was going to move from compartment A to compartment B because of a concentration difference in the water. And you were quite sure of that for about 4 seconds. And then you heard all this chatter around you. He says, but no, wait a minute. It's moving from a low solute concentration to a high solute concentration.
Same thing.
And everybody said, yeah. Right? Is that correct? Is that what I heard? Okay.
It's crazy. Sorry? Where the automatic pressure is.
Okay.
It's weird because where the automatic pressure is on the left or is it on the right?
Don't show up the instructor.
It's really
okay,
on the right. It's a negative pressure.
Alright, good. Okay, good.
It's a force resisting the water coming in. Yeah. So it's really on the right pushing against the water coming in.
So low solute is high osmotic pressure?
No.
Low solute is low osmotic pressure.
Yeah, you want lots of solutes to be high on.
You're going to be sorry that she didn't.
Just negative.
It's weird. Because she's going to be the scribe. Okay.
Yeah.
photon is the energy of a water molecule. Everybody here okay?
Kind of. There's another.
Is there a little bit of side talk going on behind you that's making you two not allowed to hear what's going on? Okay.
So we have sugar, energy, compartment A is lower.
The energy of the water
is lower than compartment B because the sugar is getting in the way of the water molecules being able to interact with it. Then, so that thing going in from a lower, higher energy to a lower energy.
Any questions for you? So what she really did was cleared up some of the confusion that I had. I had from what was said. Now, actually, you see, what Kelly said initially was okay. And what she said secondarily was also okay. But it sounded like it was different. What she said initially was that water was going to move from a higher concentration to a lower concentration. A higher water concentration, lower concentration. And the chemists will tell you that. I have a problem with that because to me, I mean, that's my problem, it's not their problem. The problem that I have with that is, to me, a concentration is an amount per unit volume. And if the solvent is water, I don't know how you can have, it doesn't make sense to me a lot to have water per water. Chemists will tell you it's the number of molecules per that volume, which makes sense to them, but I get confused. Pardon? Yeah, the volume is, but that's still. But Amy's explanation makes a lot more sense to me. Because I think of things moving from high energy to low energy. So I don't think about the sugar concentration here. I think about the energy of the water. And the free energy of the water comes about because of interaction with like molecules. And so what happens when you put the sugar in here? The sugar takes up some space. It doesn't allow the water molecules to interact. So, the free energy of the water molecules on this side becomes less than the molecules on this side. As a result of that, you end up with movement of water from a high energy state to a low energy state. Well, the way you previously thought about it is different than all of it flows. Think about it. This makes me sad. What's important in that case is to realize that these molecules, these sugar molecules, can't go through the membrane. We give them a semi-permanent membrane. So when we talk about an osmotic force, we're talking about movement of water. But we're also talking about movement what? What's the critical thing? Water. Where is that water movement?
Across the membrane.
Across the membrane. Not through a tube. Across the tube. So let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about a little bit more about what that means in terms of how we determine, what way we determine what the atmospheric pressure is.
So you're saying it's going to be
it's still going through
the egg. How come
she just did it on the
osmotic flow can be prevented by applying a pressure to push in the opposite direction of the water. This pressure measures the osmotic pressure.
Well, it measures it.
Yeah, it's just physics.
I'm saying, so on the histology thing, it would be in osmotic pressure would be in that interstitial fluid, not the vein of water. Is that right?
Yeah.
There. Yeah. Pushing. Gotcha. Oh, so, I was thinking of the osmotic pressure being a measure of this one, like it's a negative pressure. Because it says, by this definition, osmotic water flow goes from regions of low to high osmotic pressure. So that implies that this is higher osmotic pressure here. Low to high, because water's coming this way, right? So if this is high osmotic pressure, then it's really a negative pressure. So it's saying that, water flows from low to high. So that
is a high negative pressure.
Right, so that's saying that this is really the high osmotic pressure. Like, I skipped what's in there, but, like, their definition of the way osmotic, that's what's confusing. Because, to me, it depends on, is osmotic pressure in the interstitial fluid, or is it in the medium? This would say that it was the high osmotic pressure that's in the medium causing the water to come in by sucking. It's a high negative, as opposed to it's a low. This is a high negative. This is a low. Yeah. Is that magnitude of that?
That confuses me because I thought it was
pushing
that.
So I'm like, you would say you would be in the interstitial fluid. In there, it's saying, well, it's here. So, and this is a physiology color. So I'm going to ask this recess.
How does it collectively take stuff out? Side by side or charge going through a membrane. Okay? And what's absorption? Taking in. Filtration is the direction from inside to outside of the capillaries, filtration across the capillaries, and absorption is moving in the opposite direction. And next quarter, we're going to talk about, we may even talk about here, about reabsorption. What is reabsorption? Taking it twice. It's absorbing it again. It may take it in 3-4 times, but it's taking it in, taking it back in. Alright. What is the picture? What do you see?
What's nutrients?
Nutrients! Where are the nutrients?
There, sodium.
Where are the nutrients? I don't see any nutrients.
Well, I was using that word instead of sodium potassium, glucose, and oxygen, carbon dioxide.
Okay. Well, the sodium and potassium is not a nutrient. CO2 is not a nutrient, it's a waste product. So glucose is a nutrient, amino acids are a nutrient. Okay, so now you said you saw some gas here, oxygen, you saw these guys down here. What else do you see? Pardon? Proteins. Plasma proteins in here, okay. Oh, wait, exchangeable proteins, more proteins here, okay.
Endothelial cells.
Endothelial cells, right here. Okay? What else is new?
Water-filled pores.
Water-filled pores, right here. Okay? So what's a pore? Pore is a pathway, isn't it? Looks like it's a pathway from inside the capillary to outside the capillary. Okay, what else? the interstitial fluid out here. In the
interstitial.
Okay. There you go. All right. What else did you see? See, cytoplasm inside the cell. So this whole thing is an endothelial cell with cytoplasm inside. How does this picture indicate that stuff goes from the inside of the capillary to the outside of the capillary, or vice versa?
Arrows.
Is what?
Arrows.
Okay. And what do the arrows tell you?
Direction.
Where do the gases go? Where can the gases go? Right through the cell. What else can go right through the cell besides gases?
Exchange of,
they're not going right through the cell. The lipid soluble substance passed through the endothelial cells. There's a clue. Okay, how else do we get stuff across?
Transport metaphor.
Through the pores. What kind of stuff moves through the pores? Small water soluble substance passed through the pores. Okay. Good, all right. How else can you get stuff from inside the outside? Moving by across by vesicular transport. I make a vesicle, I move it across, and I spit it out. Endocytosis. All right, that's good. That's very good. Where do the plasma proteins go? They stay inside. All right. So now tell me, if I'm talking about our thistle tube experiment, and I put glucose on one side of that membrane, do I develop an osmotic force?
Yeah.
If I'm talking about the thistle tube experiment.
Yeah. Always the water must go up.
If I talk about that experiment, and I put sugar in here, glucose in there, do I generate an osmotic force?
Yes. Force over the
area. If I look at this system, and I have glucose inside, do I generate an osmotic force?
Yes.
Yeah.
But Heidi says, wait a minute. The arrow says that glucose can pass through. Does glucose contribute to osmotic force?
No.
Why?
There's no membrane.
It's not.
Because it's not across the membrane.
Yeah.
What is it in this system that contributes or develops an osmotic force? Plasma proteins. And why is that the case? Because they don't go through the membrane. They won't go through the membrane. They won't go directly through the membrane. Okay. You're going to hear a term. That term, you're going to hear two terms, depending on. You'll probably hear the terms of more than two terms. Well, that's a different kind of term. You're going to see that some books will call that force a colloid osmotic force, and others will call it an oncotic force. They both mean the same thing, and of course, as everybody knows this time of year, the abbreviation for that kind of force is pi.
Pumpkin
season, something like that.
They're not necessarily the learning
techniques. She likes the
real. Is it osmotic?
Colloid osmotic force and oncotic force is the force that's exerted by plasma proteins or by proteins on one side of the membrane. So we will actually find some proteins over on the outside of the capillary, and they're exerting an osmotic force as well. They haven't necessarily gone through the capillary wall.
The directions inward.
But those two terms, colloid osmotic pressure and osmotic pressure, osmotic force, are synonymous. They are both. The osmotic force is generated by by protein. Not moving across the membrane.
Not moving across the membrane?
Yeah, because they can't move across the membrane.
It's a force out or inwards.
Depends on where the higher concentration of protein is.
So like
in this case, the force is inward.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that they can't move across the membrane.
I'm sorry, they can't what?
Yeah.
So if I take plasma, if I take plasma and I put some plasma in an osmometer to measure the osmotic force, I'm going to end up with a value that's very, very large. Because in the osmometer, the sodium, the potassium, the glucose, the amino acids can't get through the membrane of the osmometer. But if I talk about in the system that we're talking about, the only molecule that's really producing an oncotic and an osmotic force are the plasma proteins.
Right.
So that's important to remember. What goes through the membrane, what doesn't. Yep. In this system, there's sodium and potassium and glucose and amino acids and small molecules don't contribute to an osmotic force because they can pass through the membrane.
What was the other situation?
The other situation was in the instrument that I used to measure osmotic force. All right.
So how do you measure? I mean, how do you do it?
How do you
measure osmotic force?
Has to be permeable to the ion.
I could end up measuring the concentrations of these things that I know are the case, or I could do some other kinds of measurements within the capillary. We're not really ever in a situation where we actually measure a value for the osmotic force. We will use values conceptually to think about what's happening. But if I increase the plasma protein concentration, then I'm going to increase the osmotic force resulting from that. So I would think much more about plasma protein concentration than I will about the actual osmotic force. All right. So what governs movement? What determines movement of water through the water-filled pore? What forces in this capillary?
Hydrostatic and osmotic.
And what? Libby?
Both hydrostatic and osmotic.
Both hydrostatic and osmotic force.
Osmotic force.
The hydrostatic force is the hydraulic force, is the what we call blood pressure at that point. And in what direction is that acting?
Pushing outwards.
It's also acting in every other direction. It's acting in direction along the capillary. It's acting in direction directed toward the wall. And you told me earlier that that was the force that was causing that tube to distend. That was the force that the recoil was acting against. So now, if I have that hydrostatic force and you're pushing in all directions, it's going to cause flow through the tube, but it's also going to tend to cause movement across the tube. What's going to determine if water is going to go out into the interstitium or water come from the interstitium back into the capillary?
When you said it goes down to, you're kind of saying like the way an action potential spreads?
No. Oh. I'm talking about flow through a tube. Ah, the way you have flow through the hose. We have flow of blood. We have blood flow from the aorta to the femoral artery. From the femoral artery, the arteriole.
You mean the pressure goes down?
Flow, yeah.
Hydrostatic
force. the force of the water in that vessel. And what establishes that?
The heart.
The heart establishes that. It generates the pressure to cause that to flow. When that pressure decreases, it's going to encounter more and more resistance. Alright? So now you told me, Libby said that movement of water across the capillary here is going to be determined by two kinds of forces. So when will water flow out of the capillary across the wall?
When the
hydrostatic force is greater than the anechoic force. And when it's going to flow in? The anechoic force is greater than the hydrostatic force. Well, now we have a small issue here. People who have had histology, we talked about the interstitial fluid.
Right.
Yes.
And what do you find in interstitial fluid?
Water.
What?
Water.
What might you find in the interstitial?
Water.
Water.
Ions. Proteins.
Solutes. Like what?
Sodium,
anything else?
Oxygen.
Oxygen, that's gas. Yeah, what else?
Proteins.
Oh, you find some proteins.
Collagen, fibers. Oh.
So if you find some proteins out there, you consider everything from the vantage point of out here, are those proteins creating an osmotic force to move water from the inside of the capillary to the outside of the capillary?
Wait.
Yeah, they would, but it's all relative.
And do you think that you find some sort of hydrostatic force out here? There's water out there. Yeah. Is there a hydrostatic force out there?
Yes.
Yeah. So now, give me a better definition of what's going to cause water to move across, or when would I find water moving across that capillary, the inside and the outside?
When the force in one direction is greater than the force in the other.
She says when the force in one direction, when the force from the inside to the outside is greater than the force in the other direction. So now I have, go ahead.
I would just elaborate by saying when the two forces combined in one direction are greater than the two.
Which two forces?
Hydrostatic.
Isn't it hydrostatic like, above
there's
that?
There's a hydrostatic force both on the inside and on the outside.
Yep. And which way is the hydrostatic force on the outside tending to move water?
Into the
capillary. Okay. That
means
into the capillary.
Into the capillary.
Into the capillary. So what I like about Fatima's description that makes it a little less confusing than your description, whether your description is right, is that I have to think about what forces are causing water to move out and what forces are causing water to move in. Add them up, and whichever is greater is the direction the water is going to move. So if I think about what force is going to cause water, tend to cause water to move out, I see that the hydrostatic force inside the capillary and the anechoic force outside the capillary are going to tend to move water in that direction. And the forces that are tending to move water in are the anechoic force inside and the hydrostatic force outside. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. What creates the hydrostatic pressure in the interstitial fluid? Well, if you think about that extracellular space, or you think about that matrix that's there, you can consider it to be an elastic structure here. And so if it has a volume of fluid in there, it's going to have recoil. Now we're back to the same game that we've had before. So what did we just say? We said... We said... Good thing I have my cart. That's all I can say. If I didn't have my cart, I wouldn't have any cans.
Maybe for Christmas we'll get you any more.
Our cart?
I don't think so.
We can get you a shopping cart.
This is not something you can purchase right here.
That's that whole one.
This is a living being that evolved.
We can add something. I can get you a flower.
Okay. The little roof on is really because of this camera. And if you're
light.
If you're in some rooms around with fluorescent lighting, you don't get an even distribution light on.
Needs it like an umbrella.
Yes, that's one reason. The other reason is that you see one fun thing sometimes is to move on down the hall and people say, what is that? That's another reason. And then for some people who don't think it's artistic enough, it turns out to be an art.
Art.
And of course, the other thing is that this little tray sat in our living room on top of the bookshelf for many, many, many years.
I had no use.
And we were cleaning up one day, and Jane said, what should I do with this?
And
he
said, I know.
I said, I know. I put that in the cart.
All money, the cart.
He needs a little houseplant on there.
So what we just said was...
Seriously, I'm going to get him a little African violet or something. An airplane would be perfect. Yeah.
We said the hydrostatic pressure in the interstitium is pushing in that direction. We said that on osmotic force due to plasma proteins was a force that was moving in that direction. And osmotic force due to interstitial fluid in the interstitium moving in that direction. So we will add up those four forces. And that will tell us in which direction I would tend to have more movement.
Sure.
And if we look now at the flow, if we look at the tissue space, the interstitial space in that x-ray of the fluid, and we talk about glucose going to the cells, how does it get to the cells? Well, part of the reason it gets to the cells is because at the arterial end of the capillary, this force plus this force, primarily caused by the hydrostatic force, is greater than these two forces.
Hydrostatic pressure.
But what happens now if water moves out in this direction? The plasma proteins don't move out. There's flow along this direction. How will the hydrostatic pressure here compare to here? How will the hydrostatic pressure downstream compare to the hydrostatic pressure upstream? It's going to be less because there's been resistance through the tube. And so when we get down to this end, we see that the combination of these forces, primarily due to plasma protein, is greater than the combination of hydrostatic forces and water moved back in.
How is water moving in or out helping glucose?
Sorry?
Water
how does
water moving in or out help glucose get in?
How does water moving in or out help glucose to get in or other things to get in or out?
Water soluble.
And what we saw was that that was a very small molecule. Okay. Glucose is a relatively small molecule. Amino acids is a relatively small molecule. And when we have a volume of water, they end up being carried by the flow of the water, by bulk flow. So in the same way that you see the stick flowing down the stream, okay? Or the dog violently trying to swim back to shore, getting carried downstream by the flow. It's the same kind of flow, it's a bulk flow. Good thing that, but it's a good thing that the dog comes upon a flat wall.
They have bigger hearts.
Some of my friends.
We can watch.
They do. Screen. They have bigger hearts than cats. For body.
Oh.
It's because they're built for running. Springy. So I'm saying, which one has a bigger heart? You know.
Yeah, that's important. That's important.
They love you more.
No, we've had over the last 20, we've had two dogs. One dog is really a dog, and then another dog is a one dog used to like to sit on the porch with me and play marijuana. I wasn't allowed to play in the house.
Put her outside.
And
then walk away and watch how quickly you don't get picked off.
And then we got some
other dogs. Everything wants to eat them.
We got this beautiful white dog. And I said, okay, I don't want a big dog and I don't want a dog to chip. So we ended up with this one. We went down, I'll tell you more stories about that some other day, but we got this little fluff ball and Dave was really excited to look here. Oh, isn't that great? And we went home $70 lighter with this damn dog.
And then
he took it to the vet. And the dog, liked to sing. So that put in the end to any music that's fine. As soon as you play one note, we got him for the day he died. Never stopped shitting. So I want to send something to the vet. I think he has a vitamin deficiency. John said, Harold, this dog wants to be in Alaska, not in Seattle. Although we did find out, Jane found out that he was growing here. And you know, collected and put it in your plants. So you have to fertilize your plants. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and birds like it too.
We had about 6 years of
tomatoes.
6 years of fertilizer left. Okay, so where were we? Okay, so what we'll find here is in this situation. What we'll find in this situation is that the arterial end of the capillary, there's a net filtration. And at the venous end of the capillary, there's a net reabsorption. We can get into that sometimes about varying permeabilities later on if we want to do that. But the filtration is slightly greater than the reabsorption. Changes direction.
Stop.
The filtration, net filtration is greater than the net reabsorption. What happens to the fluid out here?
Collects.
It goes into the
limb.
Okay. Did you look at lymph vessels?
Yep.
There we go. Lymph vessels. So this is, can you solid? You look at lymph vessels? They're really neat.
Yes.
I've never looked at it, but they're really what's so neat about it? Here's a terminal lymph vessel. Tell me what's neat about it. Dead end. They have eyelashes on them. cells look like eyeballs. The eyelashes because they have nuclei.
Kind of Egyptian.
I was thinking the same thing.
What else do you see?
A god.
Gaps.
You see valves?
Yep.
You see valves here, right?
It's labeled.
Yeah, but that's in a larger disc vessel. What do you see down here? Do you see any valves?
No, I see gaps.
I see gaps.
You see gaps. Oh, okay. Notice.
That's for a chylomicron.
Notice the arrangement of these cells.
Macrophage?
They're overlapping.
They're overlapping.
Yeah. That's for macrophage.
So if I increase the pressure out here, goes in. And if I increase the pressure in here,
it closes the door.
Which door?
Closes.
It pushes the gap door against here. Oh, yeah. So if I put pressure on here, what happens to the fluid in here?
That's really
that way, doesn't it? Because this arrangement, that structural arrangement is such that it acts as if it's a valve.
One-way valve.
So what causes increased pressure in this terminal lymphatic?
Increased fluid.
Increased what?
Fluid.
I don't know. Because what's going to cause the fluid to come in?
Decreased pressure.
So what else might cause this pressure in here to increase?
Not the protein, but stuff in there.
Fluid. Stuff in the fluid. Anything else? What?
Yeah, smooth muscle.
Contraction of muscle.
Because
there are muscles out here.
So
that helps pump this lymph back in. It's not, and then, oh, wait a minute, and we get bigger, we get out. And what's this stuff up here?
Smooth muscle.
What does smooth muscle do?
Contracts.
So if that smooth muscle contracts, what happens to the pressure in here?
Increases.
It increases.
Valve shuts.
What happens to the valve?
Closes.
Closes. What happens to the fluid in here?
It goes away.
You push that way. When that smooth muscle relaxes, what happens to the pressure in here?
Decreases.
Oh, what happens to the valve?
Opens.
What happens to this fluid?
Goes through the valve.
Now the pressure is here. Isn't that relationship anywhere before?
Can't remember.
Same
thing.
Nope.
What happens if in this situation, a lot of fluid comes out here, and it's more fluid than what could be handled by that mill. What happens to the fluid? You get edema. What is edema?
Swelling.
Excess.
Collection of fluid in the tissue space. So if you're working in normal lymphatic at all, and the excess fluid that is filtered and not reabsorbed, carry away from here, but if you exceed the capability of the lymph vessels, then you end up with more fluid in the interstitium. You get what's called edema because that's fluid in the interstitium.
What type of things would exceed the capability of the lymph? How would that happen?
Oh, if there's a lot of fluid that's coming out.
Where would that come from?
Where would it come from? Okay, let's take a couple situations. This table lets you add up some things and decide whether you have net filtration or net outflow. What could happen to cause more fluid to exit this capillary?
Increased blood pressure
in the capillary. Increased hydrostatic pressure, that's one thing. decreased plasma proteins, another thing. So now if I have decreased plasma proteins, then on this end of the capillary, there's not as much force pulling back. So you'd have more filtration. What else might happen? You have an infection where you have other proteins, but if you have...
Interstitially?
Interstitially. Well, if there was something that could cause... If you could cause an extra interstitial uncounted force, that could also do. What else might happen if an infection?
You could damage the lymphatics.
You could damage the lymphatics. I suppose that's true.
That'd be less water. What
happens? Monocytes move on the blood. Chop up stuff.
There's
and
more cells.
Out. What else might happen? Anything might happen to this thing here, right here?
Capillary?
Inflamed.
Capillary? It becomes extra permeable. There may be some damage to the endothelial wall. And it becomes more permeable to what?
Depends on the size.
And the water. So if the permeability increases, the pores for the same amount of driving force, what do I get? Extra flow. And if I elite protein from the inside to the outside, if it's big enough to let proteins out, then I decrease the uncounted force to bring stuff back in. So there are lots of different situations, some of which you will find in a learning guide as problems on one of the exercises. On page 61.
Okay.
Monday, we want to take our model of the baroreceptor reflex in the cardiovascular system and exercise it a little bit. So we're going to do that now in the computer lab. We'll start here. We'll talk in a couple minutes about what we want to do and then go downstairs and work on that. And we'll do that for most of the day on Monday. On Wednesday, the other thing we'll do on Monday is talk a little bit about long-term blood pressure regulation. That's on page 67. And on Wednesday, we will spend a good part of the day reviewing whatever you want to review and going over the problem that's called, on page 74, the big picture problem. The BPP. For you text messaging people. Yes. I know I don't want to. I'll be around on Tuesday, and there are some more times still available if people want to meet. The suggestion was whether or not Tom wanted to have a review session one of these days on Tuesday. But I don't think so, because he's got company.
Okay, I'll announce it on Monday.
Okay, we need to make eggs. Have a good Thanksgiving.